Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who washes his hands even after using a towel, Pete Schwabba.
Right now, I'm very excited to welcome to Nightlight the host of American Ninja Warrior and a very funny comedian and my old pal, Matt Eisman. Matt, welcome to Nightlight.
Pete Schwabba, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, man?
Man, it's been way too long.
I know. I don't know. All right. It's nice that I see you on the stream, Matt. I don't know how you did this, but somehow you are more handsome and even more buff than you were years ago when we worked together.
Living the good, clean life here in California, buddy. That's it.
You know, I didn't want to tell you this, but at the Sports Soup Rap Party, Genzer lost his underwear somewhere. It's in your house. I don't know if they've ever turned up, but give them a call if they do turn up.
What a beautiful run we had with that show, but well before its time.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But how are you, man? You're busy. You're working all the time. It's so great. And how you been? What's new?
Well, yeah, man, Ninja Warrior is going. We're on season 16. We just got picked up for season 17. I'm not sure if that's public knowledge, but now it is.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, I'm getting married September 1st, which is really exciting. I know at long last.
Congrats.
53 and finally taking the plunge for the first time. So I'm excited about that.
About time.
And leave next week to cover the Olympics for Peacock. So that's going to be a ton of fun.
Boy, oh boy, what a great, you're having a great year. That's fantastic.
It's spectacular. Yeah, I know.
You're 17.
As long as I survive the wedding.
Yeah, well, I think you'll be okay. I think you're pretty sure at this point in your life. And 17 seasons, that's pretty good. Time to give up the paper out and focus solely on your dream. That's very cool.
It's nuts. It is. It's crazy to think. I mean, I was just talking to my mom today. And we were, you know, she watches every episode and she was just saying, I remember when you started on that show and we didn't even think it would last the summer. And here it is, season 17. I was like, you know what, Mom? You're right. It is crazy. So nice to have a reminder that we got lucky with the little engine that could that is Ninja Warrior.
Your mom is your second biggest fan after Pete Schwabba. So be sure to remind her of that. I want her
them
to know
fighting
that.
Words, Schwabba.
She can take me. Hey, so tell us, all right, this is cool. I saw this recently. One of the reporters in the Capital Times here in Madison did a story about the Twinges, and they're competing on Monday in the semifinals, two twins from Madison, the Green brothers, Nathan and Marquez, 25 years old. I think this is so cool. Now I'm sure you've seen other stories like this or interesting contestants, but tell us a little bit about the Green brothers.
Yeah, they're just an incredible story. These two young men who both went to University of Wisconsin, great kids. But when they were in high school, their mom was diagnosed with cancer and passed away in a few short years. And, you know, I think a lot of people when faced with, you know, a loss like that, a lot of people will crumble. And these two have just found the strength. They competed shortly after her passing for the first time. And it was just one of these things where, you know, the mom had always said like, oh God, you know, go chase your dreams. And these guys have been doing it. And Nathan's been getting the short end. Because the twins, imagine it, they're competitive with each other. So it's not just that they're running to prove a point to their mom. It's they're also running to beat one another. It's very Cain versus Abel. But the ledger looks to get evened out a little bit, but it's, it's really nice. It's an amazing way that they, you know, keep her memory alive and represent University of Wisconsin. And what's amazing, Pete, is they've been taken under the wings of the Iowa Ninja. And it is, we're seeing like the hotbeds of Ninja Warrior. Originally it was Miami and Denver and San Francisco. And now Orlando's huge and Iowa has become big. Thanks to the Barons, they have a gym there, and Marquez and Nathan have been training with Cat Daddy Jackson Twain. So I hope your listeners are big fans of Ninja Warrior, because these are some deep cuts I'm pulling out right now.
That's so cool. How well do you have to get to know? I mean, I'm sure you got to do your homework and everything as a host, but how much do you know about all these guys? I mean, you just rattle off stuff about the Green brothers. So I assume you do your homework seriously.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny because what ends up happening is we follow all of them on social media, and you know, we're all kind of connected and it becomes this community. And so, you know, that when we shoot, it's actually a very short time we're around the ninjas. But you kind of form a connection there that then you keep up through social media. So I'm following all these athletes and they're tagging me in their videos. And in the off season, there are multiple leagues that go on. So they're traveling all over the country, seeing each other, staying connected. And so I feel like, you know, I'm there. I'm just not working out with them. I'm there in spirit. And it's really, you know, it's really gratifying to see what this show has become. That it, when it started, there was a guy, David Campbell, who'd built some obstacles in his backyard in Santa Cruz, California. And now, you know, virtually everywhere in America, there's a ninja gym nearby. And that people are, you know, kids are now growing up, not as football players or soccer players, but as ninja warriors. And so it's really been cool to kind of see this thing grow from a TV show into a sport. And it's fun kind of, you know, year round being able to keep up on it and go with my niece to Ninja Nation in Denver, Colorado, where, you know, she's training with some of the ninjas from the show. And she's like, Unky, you're not that big a star. And I'm like, you know what, Claire? Here I am. All right. Let me have my moment.
Yeah. I got you the discount to get in here. So just keep your big mouth shut. You know.
Yeah. Right. Come on.
Here's what I think is really interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, yeah. No, man. I'll just keep rambling. Go ahead. So, directly.
Well, you're here to ramble. So by all means, it's your dance floor. But I do want to say what I find interesting about the show is that it used to be, or when I first started watching Ninja Warrior, it was like this guy was a track athlete. This guy was a basketball player. Now they train to be ninja warriors. It's like doing the Stairmaster to be better at the Stairmaster. It's so specific. I don't get it. Like, well, how, when did that happen?
It was the same thing that happened with Ultimate Fighting. Yeah. Where, you know, the first UFC was in Denver, and it literally was a boxer and Butterbean, you know, and a sumo wrestler and these people who came from their discipline. And then, you know, in the next generation, you saw people who would, all right, I've done wrestling, now I'm going to learn striking. And then eventually what happened was there was a generation of fighters who'd grown up doing BJJ and grappling and submission and striking and, you know, doing the whole package. They were mixed martial artists. And it's the same thing we saw with Ninja Warrior, where, you know, as we got into the last few seasons, particularly when we lowered the age, these were kids who grew up watching Ninja Warrior. These were kids who grew up competing on Ninja Junior. These were kids who grew up with gyms. And so it was interesting seeing these kids come in and Schwabba, that's what's ridiculous, is I will watch these kids in the off season training. They're Lashang holding like a little Charlie Chaplin cane and slipping it through a ring that's slightly bigger than the diameter of the cane. Like it is these precision stunt work, and they have the agility and strength where, you know, they weigh 140 pounds. They don't have anything but muscle, and all they're doing is algebra homework. And they remind me how old I am. But it's so incredible because the people who are the best aren't necessarily the ones with the most gifted athletic ability. It's the ones who really put the time in, the ones who put the reps in. And, you know, I'm sure it's the same thing, you know, you hear in the NFL, where those receivers who learn how to run the routes, who put in the footwork, they may not be the fastest, but they're the ones who can create separation and can have a career like that. And Ninja Warrior is absolutely a sport where athleticism isn't enough. You have to have trained the obstacles. You have to have some of these basic kind of obstacle movements that are just become second nature in your body.
That's insane. Wow. What about hot yoga? Is that a good background for
I just came from a Pilates class.
Oh, nice.
No, you know what's funny? It's like, you know, I grew up and I played baseball.
Yeah.
And our workout was still lifting weights. And, you know, you understand that you wanted the power, but it would shorten and tighten your muscles. It was so bad. And now you look at these different training methods. And I think what's interesting with Ninja Warrior is, you know, we really see these athletes from a lot of different backgrounds and ones who still will train in different ways. Some are body weight, some are resistance bands, you know, some are plyometrics, some are CrossFit. But it's really interesting just kind of seeing that there really isn't, you know, one path to success. And it depends on kind of what are your athletic skills. So it's fascinating to me to watch people take different approaches and kind of figure out what suits their body type and their kind of mental approach to the course.
And what's interesting about it, Matt, is you don't necessarily cheer when you're watching the show for the best athlete. It's who has the best story. you know, it really is like about character development somehow that you pick the person you're cheering for. That's so great.
It's Rocky, right? It's fundamentally the American story is we love the underdog, right? Like the Miracle on Ice, the scrappy U.S. college kids taking on the Soviet machine. There's something that's kind of, I think America loves with that. And that's, you know, that's one of the things, like you watch the NFL or Major League Baseball, you know, you care about the team, but these players, they win or lose, make $100 million. I think Ninja's closer to the Olympic model where it's like, hey, you've worked so long for this opportunity and the opportunity is it, you know, you might win $1 million, but more than likely you're out here and it's just a chance to show what you can do. And so that's why I think with Ninja Warrior, you see people who don't hit a buzzer, but who still have bigger wins than you could imagine in life. For someone who's battling stage 4 cancer and they find a way to have the strength to just stand at the start line, you're like, that's a pretty big win.
Boy, you have this in your blood, man. You are a great ambassador for that show, Matt. The passion, I'm serious, the passion. Well, I hope you talked about Sports Hoop half as passionately as you do about American.
You know what's funny? And that was the same thing. Here's the thing people don't understand is our best jokes would very often be kiboshed because we had to kowtow to the sports. They were the 800-pound gorillas. But we sure had, we had a ton of fun with that. And I think the reason I love Ninja Warrior is like, you know, I played sports and I was okay. But you remember, you know, you always kind of dream of it as a kid. Like it's the, you know, bottom of the ninth in the World Series, the seventh game, and it's a 3-2 count, and here comes the pitch. You build these scenarios to have a moment. And I love on Ninja Warrior that very often we get to see people have a moment in their lives where, you know, you could see the fear at the start line or you could see the fear at the start of their journey to get them there. And you just see a moment where someone does something that they didn't know they could do. And you just see like a light switch flip. And what's cool is by, you know, being 16 seasons in, we've seen people who've taken the discipline and success they've had on the show and on the course, and it's translated into their lives. And so
we'll be right back. Was for Journey fan Matt Eisman, who is the host of American Ninja Warrior, former host of Sports Soup, and a very funny comedian, and he's with us right now on Nightlight for a few more minutes. Matt, I have to ask you. So we started talking about Sports Soup. Do you have good memories of that? I always say to people, being in a room with five other people writing jokes about sports and cracking each other up all day, and then you'd come in, we'd do the host meetings, and how much fun was that?
It was unbelievable. And what was so cool was we'd get guys like Matt Kemp or Jared Allen. You know, we got to interview Shaquille O'Neal and Mike Tyson and Kobe Bryant.
And Pacquiao. And that was fun.
Yeah, Pacquiao was great. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. We all felt like kids in a candy store. And it was just one of those things, though, where you realize, like, the thing we were saying was, you know, we had to keep the kid gloves on.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, Comcast, our owners, you know, they knew that the sports were the real treasure. Sports Hoop was like, if you upset these sports, we're going to make you disappear, Sports Hoop. But boy, did we have fun doing it. And I wish, you know, it's kind of, I think Barstool tricked onto it. So we'd like to say we're the Dave Portnoy kind of owes us a tip of the cap.
I'll take some of that Portnoy money.
Oh my God.
Did you, are you surprised it didn't last longer than 2 years, or are you surprised it lasted 2 years?
I think it was a little of both because it felt like it was at such a time, you know, just as the internet was growing and this kind of that kind of ability to say what everyone was thinking was happening. But it ultimately, because we were on a network and not just like on a YouTube channel, you know, I just saw this constant struggle of, hey, we got to kill that joke. You can't make a left turn joke about NASCAR. We're like, okay, seriously, they don't have a sense of humor about it. What do? You turn left.
And they probably would have, but they didn't want to take that chance. Like, I think a lot of
it was so funny that it was the smaller sports. I remember I went to the rodeo finals and I said something about, listen, these guys got to be a little crazy to ride a 2-ton bull with spurs on its nuts. And they were like, we never mentioned the spurs. I'm like, but we can see them. We can. And they were like, they were like, listen, we're not even sure Sports Hoop's going to air this week. I was like, oh my gosh. It's rodeo. Can't they take a joke?
It's like you're telling the secrets of magic or something. That's
I mean, it really was. I felt, you know, it felt like when John David Stutz shot buckwheat, like the world stopped. You know, and there was a part of me that thought, like, are they messing with me? Because I remember, like, they got to, you know, because I was clearly, the tone was more like, oh, my God, it's so amazing seeing this. I was trying to be respectful. I just crossed the line because I didn't know.
Trying to be funny. That's
yeah.
Comedy.
I mean, that's like you got to take a swing for a joke. I remember Jewel was there too, and she was just like giving me that disappointed look.
Oh wow, really? Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, she was dating Ty or married to Ty.
Oh, okay. So Matt, you were before you became a comedian. You were a doctor.
Yeah.
I can count on one finger the people I know that have done that. And you're it, buddy.
Ken Jeong and me. It's
what
yeah,
were you thinking?
So I don't know, Pete. You know, I mean, I was like, here's the thing. Like, medicine was a perfect career for me on paper. I loved science. I loved helping people. I thought that was the fit. But it was, you know, when I got into it, I realized my heart wasn't in it. And I realized I was afraid I was going to make a mistake.
Oh,
that
man.
Someone was going to die because my, you know, I wasn't as committed a doctor as I should be. And I'm like, I gotta figure this out. And I thought, I need to clear my head. I got to do something unlike anything I'd ever done. And I'd always been like sports and school. That's kind of what I did. And so I was like, I'm going to try something creative. And so I thought I'll move out to LA and do stand up and, you know, whatever, figure it out. And I was doing open mics. And if people don't know what an open mic is, particularly in LA, it just imagine someone punching you in the testicles repeatedly as you try to tell funny jokes, where it's a soul crushing experience. And yet I was so happy being there and trying to make people laugh, where I was like, I think this is what I'm meant to do. And I got lucky, I fell into commercials. So I started making money pretty quickly, where I was like, I am making so much more than I was as a doctor in training.
Wow.
And nobody dies. I get to tell jokes. And it was,
you can kill.
It really was just kind of, I got some very fortunate early breaks, and then one thing led to another. And, you know, now it's almost 25 years I've been out here.
That's so great. Was there a moment, Matt, when you, like when the switch went on, where you said, all right, I can do this. I'm confident I can make it as a comedian. What was that moment for you, if it exists?
Well, it was more as a host than a comedian, because I still play to open empty rooms sometimes on the road, which is always a huge ego check.
Oh yeah.
No, I think it was, I don't know. We got to host the 4th of July for like the Macy's 4th of July thing. And it was live, and that went well. And then I got to do Evil Live, where Travis Pastrana recreated Evel Knievel's Three Biggest Jumps live one night in Vegas. It was a 3-hour show, and we hosted it, and it was live. And it was live for 3 hours, and it was like chaos. Like, I mean, I had to, you know, it was chaos.
Wow.
And it, at one point, I was like, I can't hear anything. They literally threw to me one time when I had my hand in the porta potty pissing, and I was like, this is 2 hours in. I'm like, guys, I got to take a pee break. They're like, good, you're fine. Then all of a sudden, they're like, Matt, what do you think? I had to come running out grabbing a mic. Well, it's a fluid situation down here.
Yeah.
But I think once that one landed it and like it came off, I was like, oh, you know what? I can do this. And I don't know. I mean, there's still a point where you know, this is kind of the mentality I think that we all have in this business is there's always a part of you that thinks this job could be my last job ever. Like after this, no one will hire
right.
Where you just think like, you just never know when it's going to stop. But you kind of console yourself by saying, hey, you know, I've landed on my feet before. And I think there's just enough of, I'll figure something out where you kind of have to just tell yourself, you know, it is at a certain point, kind of a leap of faith. And I've been lucky having Ninja Warrior as kind of like the backbone for, you know, now 17 seasons. So that's been amazing. And it's, you know, it's really fun. I think now hosting for me where I feel like, you know, I'm doing the Olympics and it'll be my third Olympics. I fill in on Patrol, the live PD show where, you know, we're live following departments around the country. And it's like, okay, I feel like I can, I'm pretty good. Like, I feel like you throw me into a situation, like I understand what's going on. And it's really fun. I think it's really fun. Like with the Olympics, where we're going to be doing the Gold Zone channel. So like, you know, the Red Zone channel on Sunday, where it's just, hey, nonstop action. And, you know, there are 396 medal events. They're going to be up to 40 events at a time. So it'll be fun being like, all right, Simone Biles on vault. Now let's go to the pool. It's Ledecky. And, you know, just jumping around. And it's been, you know, I got hundreds of pages of Olympic homework around me that I'm just learning about. Breakdancing is a sport. It's breaking is the official MP. Can you believe it? Breaking is in the Olympics.
I can still pop it and lock it.
And it's cruising. It's still called throwdowns. It's popping and locking.
Oh, my gosh.
It's unbelievable.
Wow.
I'm so excited for it. And, like, America has the favorite, B-Boy Victor, who, you know, can he answer the bell, though?
Dude, you know your
stuff.
I
don't know. We're all excited.
Man, keep up the great work. You're the best, man. Thanks so much for your time. And,
well, well, what a pleasure.
Yeah. Be good to those twinges. They're Wisconsin boys.
All right. I said I'll keep the nightlight on.
Oh, please do. All right. We'll do it again, I hope. All right. Thanks, Matt.
All right, Trubba. Bye, buddy.
That's Matt Eisman, the host of American Ninja Warrior, former host of Sports Soup. Very funny comedian and fun to catch up with Matt. Back for hour number two of Nightlight. Joining me in the studio is Mike Jagger, also known as Gizmo the Illusionist. But right now we're having in studio fun, as I like to call it, with Mike. And Mike, you have a card trick.
I do.
So people listening can get in on this, or if they're watching on the stream, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah.
More appropriately, since they can see the visuals. So tell me what you're going to do here, and how can I help you?
Well, this now, I was on the show on Mind on the Mayor, actually, back in February. I forgot I was telling you about it.
You don't have to name drop. It's okay. You're here.
No. I was on a different show. but I was on in February, because this one plays well during Valentine's Day, because it's a little bit about love. Yeah. So all it involves is four cards. I'm just going to hand you four random.
Got my four cards here. This is called Love Me, Love Me Not, correct?
Would you like to get in on
Conrad,
this?
Conrad, you went in on this? Come on, buddy.
Yeah, this will be fun. This will only take a minute.
Can I look at them?
Yeah, you can look at them.
Okay. Conrad can't see.
And then you can take them in the other room if you want. And then
what do I do with cards?
Take these two with you, actually, Conrad. There you go. Set these in front of you, though.
This is a roundabout way to get us into a game of strip poker, Conrad. So.
Now, Conrad, okay, so now here's the thing. We have four cards. If you're watching along, grab four cards. You know what? If you've got four different cards, you can even be two jokers if you want.
So you're showing me your cards.
Yeah, that's that's okay. Right. That's okay. Just
I can show you mine?
Yeah. Okay. I've got two black twos, but it's a two of clubs and two of spades. So they're all different. You've got two fives, but they're different fives, right? And I'm sure Conrad has all different cards. You can pick the four that you want, Conrad, and then set the other two down in front of you. You don't have to take the four I gave you or anything, just because. So here's how it works. We're going to grab the cards now. You're going to pick up your little pile there, all right? And then, and I know this is going to seem weird, but look, I'll try to do this in the camera here. Right down the middle here, I'm not going to look at my cards, but right down the middle, I'm just going to go like this, and I'm going to rip the pile literally right in half like that. So I have a half of pile in one hand and half of pile in the other. I know, we said we had to wreck the cards.
Those good cards.
Yeah, I know. Okay. No, these are cheap, man. They're a dollar a pack here. So here you go. Just rip it right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
And then once you have a pack, put one pack, if you will, or one half. Yeah, I know.
Get them started. There you go. Very emasculated, Mike. Okay, there we go. All right, they're ripped.
Yep, there you go. One stack, put it right on top of the other stack.
Doesn't matter which
stack, right?
Beautiful.
So now we'll keep them face down at this point, okay? All right. Okay. Now we're going to take the first three pieces off of our stack. One, two, three. We're going to peel off three pieces,
Two, three.
Okay. Now we're going to open up our remaining stack, okay?
All right.
And then these three pieces, we're going to shove them all as close to the middle as possible. I know there isn't technically a middle because there's like five left, but just shove them somewhere in the middle, right? Just they don't all have to go in the exact same, just so they're all somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
And now we'll close our stack back up.
Close them up, Conrad.
Okay. The very next piece, I'd like you to set aside, like put something over it or cover it so you can't see it underneath your notepad or something like that. Just the next
Any one of them?
Just the one right off the top there. The next piece right off the top. There you go. There you go. Cover your phone. Now, the very next piece, I want you to trade with someone else. So here, trade me the top piece. Okay, there you go. And if you have a, if you want to rip one of those cards in front of you, Conrad, you can take a half of a piece from a pile in front of you and then put your piece down and then take that piece from the pile in front of you. All right?
Okay.
And if anyone else is playing by them, you know, with a, without a, somebody else there, you can do the same. So now you take the piece that you've got and put that in the pile.
The piece under my phone?
No, no, no. The piece you just traded, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Put that in the middle. In the middle somewhere.
All right.
Yeah, right. Now, this next thing is weird. You get a choice. You can take one, two, or three right off the top. I'd take three. If you had a good year, take three. If you had an okay year, take two or one, okay? I had a good year. Yeah.
Every year's
okay, now you're going to open your stack up again and shove those three pieces somewhere in the middle, wherever that is to you.
Mike, you're up to no good, and I know it, right? But I'm following along.
Okay. Now, this is where we're going to go to what I was talking about before, where we're in grade school, loves me not, hence the title of the trick.
Okay.
So the very first piece on top is loves me. So we want to take that off the top and put it right to the very bottom of the stack.
Okay.
All right. Loves me. Keep that one. Loves me not. Toss that in front of you. You don't want that.
It.
Loves me not.
Get
just like
here.
The pedal. You want to get rid of it. Okay. The next one, loves me. We're going to keep that one and put it right to the bottom of the pile. Right?
Love it.
The next one, loves me not. Get rid of it.
Boom.
I hate you.
Done. Get out of here.
The next one, loves me. We want to keep that and put it right on the bottom of the pile. Okay. The next one, loves me not. Get rid of it.
See ya.
She's got nothing to do with us anymore. The next one, loves me. We're going to keep that because we love her. And the next one, loves me not. She's two times. Just get rid of her.
Oh.
All right. The next one, loves me. Keep that. We're keeping that one right to the bottom of the pile.
Okay.
And loves me not. Get rid of it. Get rid of it.
All right.
Okay. The next one, loves me right to the bottom. And loves me not. Get rid of it.
Okay.
Now you should have one piece left. Is that right, Conrad?
I
you got
do.
One piece left?
Yes.
Okay. Now look at the piece that I had told you to put aside underneath your phone and see if it matches the piece that you have in your hand. Yay.
What the heck?
Right? Do they all match? Mine did.
All right.
Isn't
right
that
there.
Insane? If you're listening or you're playing along, you know, send us a text if it worked for
Sydney
you.
Sydney Sweeney still loves me. That's what I'm That's taking so away from this game. Wow.
So sometimes it doesn't work. It's got about a 90% success rate. Because sometimes, you know, if the cards are stuck together or if you don't get them in the exact spot, sometimes it doesn't work out. But yeah, but isn't that crazy?
If someone, all right. So if someone did what you just did, is this you doing it or is it? I mean, there's got to be something to what you did and the procedure and all that kind of stuff. But would it be hard to teach someone?
Not really. You could teach someone fairly quickly, I think. And then they could make it their own version. They could add whatever they wanted to the finish. You know, there's
How
another.
How do you know you're going to get to the thing though with the card? I guess it's just
well here this,
when you tear the well I'm not asking
no
you
no
to,
no here let's put it this way there sometimes math is a funny thing you know what I mean
okay
and I want to give you a good example of that if we can do this quick math trick
okay
I want you to name a number between we'll go between 1 and 5 to keep it quick and easy okay
right.
Shout a number out
4
4 okay I'll set that here we can't change that you picked it but we won't change it okay now I want you to think of a number between 1 and 5 but don't tell me what it is
okay
you've got one now I'd like you to take that number multiply it times 2
okay
now add 2
okay
now multiply that times 5
okay
if you're listening and playing
do you need
along
the calculator
follow
please?
Us
I
okay
do.
Now I'd like you to subtract 6
okay
what is your total
14.
I guarantee you started with a 1 and you picked the 4 because your total is 14. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Then and what did you start with, Conrad? Were you playing along at all?
I wasn't.
Oh, okay. If anyone was playing along, they'll find that whatever number they started with will be the total and the 4 will be part of it.
And that's just basic math.
Yeah, that's all math.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I know, right?
So what do you do? Like you go table to table in a restaurant or something? Do places hire you to do this? It seems
typically,
like it would be great entertainment if you're just eating someplace. You know?
Yeah, typically that's my style is to do what's known as table magic, restaurant magic, close-up magic, strolling magic, walk-around magic. It's got a lot of titles. Street magic. It's basically anywhere where there are little small groups of people. You know, wedding receptions are perfect for that, especially like between the time it starts and dinner starts. There's about an hour and a half. People are just sort of milling around trying to catch up. And when I go to a wedding, the thing I hear the most is we had people stay all night and they couldn't stop talking about your magic because it creates a buzz in the room, you know, and then pretty soon people are talking about it and they can't get enough. And all it takes is a few quick magic tricks. You know, I do some with cards. I do some with coin. I try to work with what people have on them. Do you have a dollar? Do you have a coin? Do you have what's in your pocket? You know,
right.
That's the best magic of all. you know, where you can work with what's in the room. Everyday object magic is the category. And I didn't realize that when I was getting into magic. I realized that I liked that particular category because it, you know, you got to get up close for that kind of magic. You just have to. And I like people and I like being in their personal space. And
okay,
I don't have that issue. You know?
So what do you do? Mike Jagger is my guest, also known as Gizmo the Illusionist. He's here in studio on Nightlight doing some tricks for us. And we're going to talk about Houdini in just a minute. But what do you do? Like, I've been in show business long enough. Sometimes it doesn't work. The joke falls flat. You can't remember a line. You play the wrong chord. There's got to be something in magic. What do you do when something flops?
You have a fail-safe sometimes. Now, okay. There are plenty of illusions that do have a fallback. They have a plan B, if you will. And if the audience doesn't know what's coming, you can throw plan B out without them realizing you changed the trick at the end.
Okay.
Not everything is that way. There, what usually happens when because I've messed up tricks and I have, you know, they have gone wrong. Typically that happens when I've done too many for too long. Like I did magic at a Renaissance fair one time. I was there for like 6 hours, just strolling around. And I actually had a deck of tarot cards that I found, really old looking tarot cards. I took the death card out. I didn't want anybody to pick that just because, you know, but it was so much fun. You know, your card was the Four of Cups, you know, or whatever, right? People loved it. But I realized though, after about the fifth hour, my mental sort of, you know, ability was starting to go brrr.
Right.
because to do magic, you know, you're juggling in your head, you're doing one thing, saying another, and, you know, doing something else, you know?
Right.
So it kind of wears on you to a point where you start to screw up after a while. I'm like, oh, time to shut it down, go take a break, you know, and just stop for a while, you know? And that's when you know you've done too much magic.
I can't even imagine. That's gotta be crazy. But do people do they call you out on it? Like if if I taken this card and this card and it was not the Five of Clubs, it was a three and a four or something, what would you say? Like, how would you back out of that?
I would just say, well,
the person.
I would sometimes, or sometimes I will sort of adapt the idea of the chi in the room, you know, how,
okay.
And it's funny. I, in a way I'm joking, but in a way I'm not, because there's a lot of stuff written about it, about how the chi or the energy in the room can go negative, or people can be just like, somebody heckles a comedian, you know, people sure. heckle magicians all the time. And heckling is just a matter of them not going along with the trick. You know, here, pick a card, give me them, I'll pick the cards. And then they, you know, it's like, so I have fallbacks for those things, because okay. those things have happened enough. There's always a plan B for that kind of stuff, but it is a type of heckling. So if you're prepared for it, you can do something about it. But
right.
sometimes people surprise you, you know, you're like, wow, did you never have fun as a kid, or what's going on there? You know,
I would just be that guy where it would lay flat and I'd be like, ooh, yeah. tell us about Houdini.
Okay. Houdini, well, I could really go on for a long time.
Well, he's from Appleton. We know he's a famous illusionist.
He was.
He was an influence of yours, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Houdini actually was born in Budapest, Hungary.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Yeah. And then his parents moved here when he was very little, and they lived in Appleton for a while. His dad was a rabbi. And there's always a good conspiracy, but there was this conspiracy story about his dad having to do with some sort of murder, and that's why they had to come to the U.S.
Oh, wow.
It's probably not true, but I remember reading that and going, ah, there's another conspiracy. You know, you got to love it, right?
Yeah.
But you never know. You just don't know, because back then things were different, you know. But he moved here, and he discovered magic through a book from Robert Houdin. And Robert Houdin was an illusionist from France who made automatons, these automated things out of clock parts, because his dad was a clockmaker. I could go off on that, but he studied that guy and he loved magic. And then he realized he wanted to be like Houdin. So he named himself Houdini, which is Houdin with an I. And somebody said in Italian or something that adding an I means you're like whatever you're adding the I to. So he's okay. like Houdin. So he became Houdini. And his first name, believe it or not, his real name is Eric Weiss, or Eric Weiss, depending on, you know, W-E-I-S-S.
Houdini's name?
Houdini's real name, yeah. And what's interesting is, born March 24th, 1874, 26
okay.
years before the millennial. He died in 1926, 26 years after the millennial. There was 52 cards in a deck of cards. His life was cut short, or cut in half, you could say. So it was all in the cards for him.
Wow. So,
but going back to his first name,
yeah.
his real name was Eric. His mom, being from Hungary, always called him Little Airy. short for Eric. Harry, where are you, Harry? And his friends are like, why is your mom calling you Harry? So he kind of picked it up as a kid, okay, calling him, you know, Harry, just to kind of pick on him a little bit. So he just stuck with it. He's like, you know what? And but he also claims that it was an homage to Harry Thurston, another famous magician back in time. But,
how long did he live in Appleton?
It was a very short period. It was when he was a kid and he got to be a teenager. There was a joke that he quoted saying, you know, my greatest escape was escaping Appleton, Wisconsin.
Why do people do that to Wisconsin sometimes?
But it wasn't because he didn't love Wisconsin. He always came back and he did love Wisconsin.
Oh, that's good.
But he left because the opportunities were just bigger in bigger cities, you know, and that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he knew he was great at some point and he knew he had the skills. So he's like, I got to get out of this small town, man. I got to go bigger. And I'll go bigger, go home, you know?
All right. Coming up next, Mike Gizmo is going to recommend a movie about magic that he and I were talking about. And I have a couple more Houdini questions. So we'll do that too. That's next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I can't hear a sound, folks talking loud, but I don't see at all. I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't
know where to go. It's hopeless, so I guess I'll leave it alone.
Well, I spent all that day fixing up to go somewhere. Thought I was late, and I found she was.
From the 814, Jameson, who has become one of our more interesting texters, I would say, certainly said, somehow he's referring to our talk from last segment. This reminded me of P.T. Barnum, I think with the ticket thing. When he saw that people were spending too much time at his attractions, he made new signs this way to the great egress. Egress is Latin for exit. And he duped them into leaving, thinking they would see something else. Amazing.
That's beautiful. I actually portrayed P.T. Barnum at a dead celebrity monologue that was happening at the Tarleton here not that long ago.
Kidding.
Yeah, he was a character, man.
Jameson
he was
calls
a character.
It genius, and it sounds like you have the same sentiment. And then Bridget answering our question for the night, what movie should never have been made into a sequel? She says, Grease. You can't touch the original. Boy, that is a great one. I think Bridget wins best answer of the night. Although I would say Saturday Night Fever had a sequel too, and I think it was called Stayin' Alive.
Oh.
And at the end of the movie, John Travolta walks out. He got some kind of validation. He says, I just want to strut. The end of the movie is just him doing that Travolta walk to the music. It was really cheesy. So I don't even think I saw that whole movie, but that probably never should have been made into a sequel either. So Mike Jagger is here. He is also known as Gizmo, the illusionist. We were talking about Harry Houdini. How did Harry Houdini do the escapes? How do you practice something like that? It seems dangerous.
He practiced breathing. He could hold his breath for a long time. It was like a minute and a half with no trouble at all. And he was very aware of that. So he would never panic. When you're hanging upside down in a water tank, a lot can go wrong.
If
you have some kind of you got to watch what you eat before you do all of that. There's a lot going into that, a lot of prep.
You don't have time to pop a couple Tums if you get heartburn either, right?
Some burp or something comes up, man. But he did have a failsafe. There was always a little, you know, he had a signal that they could sort of get him out quickly if they needed to. Thankfully, they never did. I don't think he ever had to use that. There's an inherent risk in that. But, you know, his most dangerous illusion or trick that wasn't really an illusion, because he was a showman, much like David Blaine today.
Yeah.
A showman. But his most dangerous thing that he did was he dove into a river. I want to say it was like the Chicago River, some river that was like frozen. And they chipped a hole in it down at the, you know, they were up on the bridge and down below there were some people. They chipped a hole big enough for somebody to go through it. He was up on the edge of the bridge wearing nothing but like a pair of shorts, and they handcuffed him and he jumped in from the bridge through that hole. Now, in the movie and in his autobiography, they explain that he had a key taped to his foot. And I'm not giving that away. You can watch the movie, you can read the book, and that's all fair game. He doesn't care that we all know that now, so I feel it's okay to say that. But in the movie, they showed that, and they tried to show it in the movie, but in the book, oh my God, he said that was his most terrifying moment, because when he went through, a little bit of current was down there that he wasn't expecting, and it started to pull him down river, and then he couldn't find the hole. He didn't have anything to breathe. He had to But he knew he had a minute and a half. He knew he could take his time. He's like, don't panic, man. If you panic, you're dead. So he had to find the hole again. Dude, that was the most difficult part of that whole thing. Once he saw a little bit of light, he was like, oh, there it is. And he was like, and then he, you know.
Genuine panic. Oh, yeah. The ultimate escape artist, Harry Houdini. Wow. So he was able to get the key off his foot and undo the cuffs. But then the
by
next
the time he
was,
did that, yeah, he was like, oh my God, where am I?
And
you
he's
know,
freezing too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he you know, climbed into water that was frozen and stuff. He's, you know, prepped himself for that. You know, you can do that to some degree.
Right.
And plus the body, you know, goes into a certain shock, you know, and if you know how to prepare for that, you know what it is. You can mentally sort of overcome that to some degree. But you still have to prep for that. That's a lot of, that's why I said he's a showman. You know, you know, the average person, you just can't just go and do it. You got to prepare for that. There was a guy that tried one of his illusions where Houdini would climb into a coffin. They'd plunk him into the river and then he'd come swimming out. And this guy in India did it about 5 or 6 years ago. He didn't make it. And something went wrong. There was a little too much current that he didn't count on or something.
Oh,
didn't factor in. Just didn't make it. So I was like, and then in the magic community, we all heard about it. It's like, oh my God, somebody tried it again. You know, people are always trying Houdini's tricks and some people fail, you know? And then that's when you realize, hey, there's real danger there. You know,
stick to the cards.
Cards, really. That's what I do, man. It's like, I stick to close up magic.
You could probably get a bad paper cut there.
Yeah.
That would be...
I have this trick that's a Houdini type of trick where it involves chains and you chain me up and everything. I was prepping for a show and it sort of had this sort of older theme. And I thought, well, I'll bring some Houdini magic and I'll bring up, you know, and I practicing with it. I didn't realize there was this little part of it that was chrome and the chrome, because it was old, it had like flaked back and it created this like razor edge.
I went
to spin it off. It sliced into my thumb about a 2-inch long gash, if you will.
Into someone's pasta primavera or something?
No, luckily I was at home and it just blood everywhere.
Oh, man.
I put a bunch of Band-Aids on it and I went and did my show anyway, you know, and
holy smokes.
A couple of people are like, what's with all the Band-Aids? I'm like, a little prep injury.
Magic
there,
gone awry. Mike, we have a couple more minutes. What do you have a favorite magic movie or magic song about magic? What do you like?
I do. Heart has a song about magic, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the song.
It's called Magic.
Yeah,
right?
It's called Magic. Yeah. That's a great song. But my favorite movie dealing with magic is a movie called In and of Itself. It features Derek Delgadio. And if you're listening and you really want to look at something crazy and great and good and amazing, I'd advise you to check this out. I believe it's on Amazon Prime. In and of Itself is Derek Delgadio's life story, so to speak. It's an off-Broadway show, and they explain a lot of it in the beginning. And it talks about how he did like 500 performances and he is so phenomenal with cards and everything. And he does this crazy story about it. And then he talks about his life and his mom and how he experienced, you know, a different life than most people, you know?
Hmm.
So it's very touching, very amazing. And he does this thing at the end where he sort of guesses everybody's sort of personality in a way.
Wow.
It's just amazing. It's an amazing.
So kind of human, but also a little bit of magic in
there. Yeah. A good blend of magic and a life story.
And give us the name of it again.
It's In and of Itself.
On Prime.
On Prime from featuring cool. Derek Delgadio. Yeah.
I'm watching a show called The Last Thing He Told Me with Jennifer Garner on Apple TV. And it's good. Conrad, what'd you watch this weekend? Anything?
I really didn't get to much this weekend. I watched another episode of the Sausage Party TV show.
Here are Conrad's big shows the last couple of weeks. MILF Manor and Sausage Party.
Sausage Party? What is that? Does that have to do with cup and balls? Is that what we're going back to?
Sounds like it. It sounds inappropriate on some level. Mike, thanks so much for coming in. This was fun. We got to do this again soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I get free time, I'll definitely come back on for sure.
Absolutely. And good luck with Pippin. Break a leg.
Thank you, man. That sounds really exciting. It'll be a fun show.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Mike Shigera, a.k.a. Gizmo the Illusionist. Check him out at in De Pere this weekend in Pippin. Have a great evening, everyone, wherever you are in our wonderful state. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwab on behalf of Conrad. Good night, Wisconsin.